previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
We were just talking about how it's nerve-wracking. We train our whole lives for the Olympics, but this is a couple weeks, and we want to stay, right, Adam?
Right, Mariah. We want to stay. Thanks for that. We're just trying to stay, and we train our whole lives for the Olympics. And Erin,
yes,
we're just trying to stay.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 202 for the week of May 7th, 2018. I am the judge who just won't sit down, David T. Cole, and I'm here with size 18 Capizio, Sarah D. Bunting.
That's a flagrant one.
Foxy Trotter, Tara Ariano.
Olay.
And everything you do, I do backwards and in heels, Will Leach.
I hope you guys can all work around me being 7'2" on this podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Extra Hot Grape. Before we get into it, I just want to do a producer's note that this is our first show back from a move for me and Tara. We are not in our real digs. We are just sort of doing a podcast equivalent of sort of camping out. So our setup is a little weird. I think we might be in each other's mics. You might get a little echo between us two. Just saying the audio quality might not be up to our solid B-minus standards that we usually provide. So with that in mind, let's get to this episode. Sarah, take it away.
Indeed. Welcome back, everybody. We are joined today by founding editor of Deadspin and one of the best fans in baseball, Will Leach. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It has been a while. This happens every single time. I should warn you, every single time I'm on a podcast that I listen to all the time, I turn into like, I'm the guy in the TV set on the show hanging out with the Flintstones. I'm always just like, oh my gosh, there's Dave doing that Dave thing. I love it when he does the Dave thing. I'm a big nerd about shows that I'm on that I listen to all the time. So I warn you all in advance.
You're so sweet.
We love that. Well, you're going to be recording with the stars, as it were, about our lead topic this week, Dancing with the Stars season. I'm going to say gazillion and 12.
26.
Thank you. This, like I said, gazillion and 12. This is the all athletes extremely short mini season. I think it's 4 episodes total.
Yep.
And the athletes include Olympic skaters, including one Tanya Harding, more on her anon, Johnny Damon, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the Notre Dame buzzer beater lady, and others. So I had never watched this show before, ever. I think maybe I had seen one episode in order to prep an interview with Tom Bergeron, who is like my favorite host ever. I always forget. I'm like, oh, it's Tom Bergeron. Phew, this won't be so bad. But this, I mean, I enjoyed it, but I also found watching Kareem Abdul-Jabbar extremely painful. Did anyone else have this experience of deep sadness at watching this great sportsman and American waving like a reed in a strong wind?
We usually throw to our guest first, but I do want to just say that to me, he's not a great sports legend. He's the guy from Aeroplane. And that's how I knew him.
Also a legend.
For so many years. And I shit you not, I watched that movie because that was one of my informative comedy movies as a child. And it was decades later before I knew that he was like a real basketball star / legend. No fucking idea who he was. I just thought it was hilarious that there was this guy in goggles and wristbands, sweatbands being pulled from the cockpit. So yeah. Uh-huh. So for me, not so much basketball, but it was painful to see him. You know, he seems like a genuinely super likable fellow, and it's nice to see a 71-year-old 7-1 guy being able just to, you know, why not? Let's go at it. Let's do it. But guys, he's 71. Like I just turned 46 yesterday and I can barely move. Like getting off the couch is like a whole production. Never mind.
We'll throw it to Will in 1 second, but I just wanted to add my reaction when we first saw him was, I worry about him the way I worry about large dogs, that I'm concerned about his hips yes. and his longevity. Okay, go ahead, Will. We're done talking over you now.
Well, it's funny because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, of course, one of my favorite things, I've never watched the show either. It's literally the first episode of Dance with the Stars I've ever watched, the first two episodes I've ever watched. And it's funny because it's a good reminder how little, like, most, you know, normal people, like, with functioning lives and things to do and things that are important and proper priorities of what's important in the planet, how little they know about sports. It was very funny that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like, literally, like, one of the most famous basketball players of all time, one of the first things he says, so, I played for the Lakers.
And then he has to explain the sky hook.
Like, yeah.
Sort of looking off camera like, really? Yeah. Like, oh, buddy.
Like, he's the leading scorer of all time. Like, no one has ever scored more points than Abdul-Jabbar. But also, you know, it's funny. It's also a good reminder, too, that when you are an athlete, no one sees you as anything other than your immediate, often physical deformities. And to say that, like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is a fascinating human being. He's an activist. He's written 18 books. He writes, like, he's a fascinating human being. He's been through all of these things. He was an airplane, most importantly, of course, David.
Yeah, sure.
But it's funny because all that's great, and I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is an incredible human being and one of the best basketball players of all time and a fascinating guy. And basically all anyone do when they look at him is like, wow, you're so tall. And that's it. And that's just it. And that's just that's what it's like when you are a basketball player. Like, no matter what, if you're not a basketball fan, you're just the abnormally freakishly tall guy. I'd like to note there are 14 players in the NBA right now taller than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So 7'1" is obviously very tall, but in basketball terms, it is just very tall. So, it was very strange. I found this. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to me is a figure of, like, much dignity. So when I saw him doing this, I'm like, okay, can he keep his dignity? And I felt the fact that he did as well as you could possibly hope keeping his dignity, I felt therefore that was a victory.
Yeah, I don't feel like he, like, was being silly or stupid. It's just that, like, the dude's 71. You just can't move like you can when you're 41 or 31. And, you know, it just showed, that's all. But I'm wondering just about the casting in general. Like, if you could have a post-mortem on the show with the people that are casting everybody, I think you would see, like, well, this is what we thought when we were doing it on paper. And this is what it actually turned out to be. Because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar being over 7 feet tall and having these dancing coaches, which are mostly shorter people, seems like a fun thing. And they do play it up in the second dance of our second episode of his dance, where there's actually two people, you know, one on somebody else's shoulders dancing just so that they could do eye to eye, like that kind of stuff on paper.
And not
seems...
her face in his crotch, which was also she is very small. Like, maybe, I don't know what the answer is, but maybe not her. Like,
yeah.
Isn't there anyone who's 5'8"?
Other stuff like Tonya Harding on the show, like, seems like it could be a ratings get or something you can hook your promotions into. But in practice, it was just like, it was obvious that they wanted to do something with her, but the placement of her, can we put her last in the lineup? No, that's too obvious. Let's put her second last, just not to bring the crowd down in case that happens. And the way they just frame her entry into the contest and where she is emotionally, where she is in her life is just so false.
Also painful.
Yeah. That it would be interesting. It would be an interest, since the season is so short, I would love to see a web series just about that whole casting this season. How, you know, they'll never do it. Then I can show you how that sausage is made. But I got to feel there's a lot of people that usually cast Dancing with the Stars when forced to cast all athletes couldn't do their A game.
Well, I mean, it is a trope of the show that they'll have someone on who's kind of a tabloidly notorious person, like Ryan Lochte right after his Olympics. Awkward.
What did he do again? What was this deal? He was lying about something?
Will would know better than any of us. What did Ryan Lochte do, Will?
Yeah, he was the one that was that showed up. That there was an incident where they claimed that they were robbed by local people. That's turned out they were just being jackasses.
Okay.
Yeah, they peed. They were like public urination or something.
So you've got a jerky frat dude versus this giant Olympic scandal where she allegedly may or have may not, world's most sarcastic air quotes, in effect, you know, broken somebody else's leg so that, you know, they would have a better chance at placing higher. Like, that's a pretty big thing to kind of whitewash over for the sake of a dancing show, you know?
Well, they did kind of whitewash over it for the sake of an Oscar-nominated movie. So, I mean, for what it's worth, like, she's, like, so much more – like, it's for all these sports reporters that covered the – because if you watch that movie – I don't know if you've seen the movie, but the movie makes her look like some sort of, like, almost – like, we regard her as not a hero, but certainly we're reassessing her life and, like, realizing she was a victim in a lot of ways. And a lot of reporters were like, nope, she knew what was going on the whole time. And so it's very weird to see this, like, now – like, I feel like I can't blame Dancing for the Stars to do it for doing it if Margot Robbie does it.
I suppose.
And there's the fact that, you know, there's that movie, there's the movie, and then there's the like numerous specials and the 30 for 30 that was great, but that all came out around the anniversary of those Olympics and all of that happening. And in every case, she is still so raw about it and about her own image and is on the point of tears has been on the point of tears the entire time, both episodes. And like, she was banned from figure skating for life. And she's like, I just want everyone to know that I deserve to be here. And it's like, but I mean, define deserve. Like, my grandmother used to say, like, there's all kinds of luck. Like, there's all kinds of deserve. Like, I don't.
Tucker Carlson has done this show. Like, who gives a fuck? It's Dancing with the Stars.
You didn't make it through a bracket to get here.
No, he didn't.
Honestly, like, for me, this is like the pop culture road sign of the, you know, you are now entering, you know, the Trump truth era. Here we go. Tanya Harding on Dancing with the Stars, Comeback City. Here we go. You
know. But I'm saying this, she's not the first. Like, this is a stop that a lot of people make on their redemption. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it has given a lot of people like more of a boost into another area, like Leah Remini post getting fired from The Talk.
Yeah, but like, this person did something criminal. You know what I mean? This is sort of like like Stringer.
I was the one who was saying fuck off Tanya through all her segments. Like I don't want
Stringer
her there.
Bell coming on Dancing with the Stars. Like, that's kind of feel like it's in that territory. I mean, I would like to see Stringer Bell Dancing with the Stars. He's a more compelling
He'd probably
villain.
Be really good, actually. I bet Idris Elba can dance. Sorry, go ahead,
Mom. One thing I like, I have to say, I don't know what the usually it seems like people that have less stuff, other stuff going on that are on Dancing with the Stars. One thing about the athletes I thought was fascinating is like a lot, I don't know if they usually have so little time, maybe it's the truncated season, but I thought it was really interesting that like they had to put together these big dance sequences and like Arike, who I've never said her last name, but the awesome Notre Dame basketball player, she's like literally taking finals. She like had to go back to Notre Dame for finals, and Adam Rippon and the other skater are doing the show. Like, they have no time to practice at all because it's truncating season. I will say that actually, if there's an advantage to having athletes on there, it is the idea that they are used to improvisation. They are used to performing live. They are used to having to just kind of put to have like 80 other things going on at once. That was, I have to say, I mean, never watched the show before. I found it kind of impressive, the idea that she basically trained for that big team dance sequence over FaceTime, which is really just wild. So I will say that, like, it made me kind of appreciate it. Obviously, it's cheating a little bit to have figure skaters go. Like, come on. They're, like, figure skaters, they're definitely the ringers of this group. But it did make me appreciate how kind of difficult it is, how kind of magical what athletes do actually really is. We just kind of sit and watch them on television and be like, yeah, that's pretty good, but that guy was faster. But all of this is amazing. And I feel like that was kind of a good little reminder of – I assumed that team dancing was, I'm like, oh, Arike, who I love, and she's just, she's really, it's difficult. If you like women's basketball at all, women's college basketball, she is the biggest person at all on the show. Like she's like truly a star. And so I was like, oh, I'm really worried for her on this team dancing. She chained over FaceTime while studying. And so the fact that she did that and did so well is just a reminder that like there is something kind of special to what athletes do.
Yeah, it's funny you say that about figure skaters, though. I mean, they definitely have had a lot of those on over the years. And I always think it's a bit of a cheat because we already know they know how to be graceful and they know how to learn choreography. You know, like this is what they do for a living or whatever. If they're amateurs, I guess, technically for the Olympics, not for a living. But what's weird about Dancing with the Stars is that they always have at least a couple of athletes every season, and football players do really well, like Rashad Jennings, was that his name, who came back to be a judge in the second episode. He was a past winner. And that guy, Josh, who danced last in the first episode, last name, please.
Norman.
Thank you. He was amazing. Like, you would never think that he could be, he could hold his, I mean, I wouldn't think that necessarily that like football is, would have similar, talent areas that it would translate to Dancing with the Stars, but he was really, really good.
Showboating.
Yeah, right.
Well, and it's a lot of choreography too, football.
True.
So that
That's
A, you don't get killed, and B, they all have to memorize like hundreds of plays and be able to switch to them on the fly so as not to get literally run over by a 425-pound refrigerator. Mm-hmm. So that's not that surprising. The flexibility that they have is a little surprising. I think we're all used to thinking of football players as these like, you know, like condominium people that are not, that can't move and are muscle bound.
I think Hines Ward won one season on this too, I believe.
I think that's right.
The football player who's from here in Athens, Georgia. And so, you know, like it does make a certain amount of sense. And it's also, remember, football players, what's funny is a lot of people talk about like football players, like they do these end zone dances and they're so look at me and so on. But the thing about football is no one can ever see your face. So like people are always wearing these helmets. So there is a natural kind of showboatmanship that we don't necessarily realize about NFL players because A, the league is fascist, but B, also that actually B, C, and D, but also they're wearing helmets.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's kind of worth keeping in mind too, is a guy like Josh Norman has always been known throughout the NFL. Obviously, he's really good, but he's always been known as someone who's a big personality. But as a fan, you never really get to see it because either he is wearing a mask all the time or he shows a brief moment of his individual personality and therefore is fined and penalized for it. So it's fun to see. You wonder if that's part of it too.
Well, one of the things that I noted in the first episode was it seems like the of all of the athletes we've seen, the one who comes from the sport with the least grace is Johnny Damon, the baseball player. And sure enough, he was one of the first two stars to get bounced out. You, Sarah and Will, are both baseball fans. What did you think of his performance?
I thought it was fine and he should have been able to stay. If this was his karmic punishment for appearing on Celebrity Apprentice, I am fine with that. Then again, I covered Celebrity Apprentice, and although I did issue an apology on this very podcast, who knows what my karmic punishment is for that. But yeah, I thought he was fine. And what's his nuts from the Cubs? Grandpa Rossi?
David Ross.
David Ross went quite far last year. So I think he was like the runner up.
Yeah, so, making fun of David Ross is one of my favorite things in the world to do, by the way, as a Cardinals fan. He played 18 years in baseball and won for the Cubs. But but because he was on that Cubs team, he's always known as a Cubs guy. I'm a Cardinals fan. I hate the Cubs. Screw the Cubs. Cubs die. I said too much. I told myself I want the Cubs to
cut
die.
Cut his mic. People. Just kidding.
That baseball player, something Damon. Yes.
Johnny.
Sports guy. Johnny Damon. Sports guy. Which is actually kind of a fun name to say. Sounds like he should have a sports bar franchise. He looks like every video game character from a Japanese video game where you are supposed to know that that guy's American. That haircut, he's that is like...
And the smile, too. Yeah.
It's a little Cro-Magnon-y, like, you know, like, too.
Well, not Johnny Bravo, because that's a character, but he would have a name of that ilk in the video game, you know?
Johnny Texas.
Johnny Texas. Totally. You know, or some of the stars in it.
Steve California.
Yeah, exactly.
Apple Pie Hicks. And he, before he had that hair, he had this like long flowing.
Yes.
Where it was cape drape.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because when he had that long hair, people all thought he was like a rock star, like a metal rebellious guy. And now you see him, you're like, nope, you're just a thick neck jock like everybody else.
You're fun dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Fun dad.
And these athletes are also, going back to something that Will said earlier, that these athletes are also used to asinine questions from the sideline reporter with the very expensive weave, which is definitely what they get here. I mean, I guess all celebrities are used to that to some extent. But, oh, Aaron, why? Why are you? I mean, I guess it's to drag it out to the full 2 hours. But there was a moment in the premiere where she referred to someone as a lady boss. And I'm like,
girl boss.
And I was like, the term you're looking for is just boss. Like, but then it's like, oh, right. This is a show that airs on a, you know, Disney property at 8 o'clock.
Right.
And is like straight, is trying to be as straight down the middle.
So here's what they do for that. They weren't shy about doing the whole Disneyland thing in episode 2. You know,
no,
since
they
ABC
weren't.
Oh no, usually they'll have a whole Disney night in a
regular
season.
My point
is
they're not shy about doing synergistic pause men, you know, things. And why not have the Aaron be dispensed and have that role be somebody from the ABC / Disney stable each week? Like this week it could have been Chewbacca because of Han Solo coming out or whatever, but that kind of thing, right? It would be something new. Mm-hmm. You would be able to promote something else while still having an actual person people care about. You'll definitely get a higher caliber of human, human's wrong word, higher caliber of celebrity than Aaron, and everybody gets their cake and everybody gets to eat it too there, I think.
Did you have anyone in mind other than Chewbacca? Thanos.
That's right. Thanos will make half of the contestants disappear every episode.
Speaking of the apple pie-iness of it, though, there is also the controversy in the second episode with Jenny wanting to switch songs because her song was too risque. So I looked it up to find out what the song was. It was a track by Janelle Monáe, and Dave was like, is it that pink song with the pants? Like, no, it's not that one. it was a different
one. If only.
And I looked up the lyrics and like, whatever, they're pretty sexy. But still, I felt like that whole thing was grandstanding. Like, it seemed like there was probably a way they could have shot around that. Is this something that is going to benefit her as a sports personality to like be seen on the show being like, I have to stand up for what I believe in and my kids and blah, blah, blah. Speaking as someone who doesn't follow sports or care.
I think if she were an active baseball player, that would totally benefit her. I think like making that sort of stand, she kind of, she, for the record, like, it's funny. Like she's probably the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar of softball. like she is like the best there ever was in that regard.
Okay.
Like she's really just kind of amazing. And, while not perhaps as, politically influential, which I suppose maybe for the best. But I would say that, That may be something specific for her. I feel like certainly on a show like this, where the idea, like Josh Norman, for example, has shown like support for kneeling protests, by the way, that didn't make it on this show.
Right.
It's probably the best way to look at that. I think that may be more of an ABC thing than a sports thing.
Fair enough. It was Make Me Feel by Janelle Monáe, by the way, according to people who looked it up, because it was originally on the website before she vetoed it.
Well, and oh my God, it was so dramatic. But it was also like, all right, now you're wearing a Catwoman outfit that everyone can't stop exclaiming over.
Honestly.
That, like, your gynecologist does not know as much about you as America now does, thanks to these pants. Bless your heart. But how is that not who you represent? Like,
right.
Ugh, whatever.
I don't understand how the voting works. I don't care to understand how the voting works. It seems to be that you vote one day, then it kind of carries over to the next one. So why do they cut it off at the end of the first episode? Again, don't care. Don't explain it to me. Don't care. But I will say that the fact that they only have 4 episodes for the whole season actually makes it kind of like worth watching for somebody who doesn't give a shit. Like, I'm 2 episodes in.
Yeah.
I'll probably just pick up the last 2 because, well, why not? I'm already pot committed. And now that I have people that I kind of hate and like, I want to make sure that the right people are eliminated, right?
Who do you hate?
I didn't like the baseball guy.
Okay.
Well, he's out.
Frankenballer.
Frankenhead.
Cro-Magnon Man.
Yeah. I didn't like the softballer.
Right. Jenny.
Okay. I don't like her either.
And I've never seen Adam Rippon before. I only heard people talking about him, but he's a delight. So like to get, I would like to see him go far, and I would like to see her, his friend eliminated quickly, because she's just too much.
She's a little annoying.
Yeah. And so, but the thing is about the fact that they're eliminating everybody so fast actually kind of makes it like a way better version of that typical sort of show where it's last 13 episodes and there's like this one weird episode where everybody gets a bye and bye.
it's actually very sportsy.
You said a sportsy thing.
It is actually kind of sportsy though, because I mean, it's funny, there's all these Olympians on here, and with the exception of Rippon, who I think is going to be around for a while. No, but no one's going to think about any of these Olympians ever again until the next Olympics, maybe. Like that luge guy, like no one's going to remember that luge guy ever again. And I think that's kind of I think it's good to have like a short season like this, because there's no reason to drag luge guy into the summer.
I actually thought luge guy was really charming. I was surprised that he had that much personality. I'm used to only seeing sports people like when they host SNL and uniformly are fucking terrible or are Adam Rippon. So I was like, he has way more charisma than I would ever expect a snowboarding Olympian to have. But yes, I agree with you in general. I will also probably watch this. I always forget because I have dipped in and out of Dancing with the Stars. I don't think I've watched a whole season since season one. The Joey McIntyre year.
I've never seen an episode of this before this season that wasn't at Kim Reed's house.
Right. Actually, Joey McIntyre might have been season two. Anyway, Adam is obviously adorable. He's so funny and charming. When he did Sissy That Walk for his first dance, I was like completely in love. Like, of course you have to do that. You don't know if you're Adam Rippon if America's gonna turn on you and you're only gonna get one chance. Like, he left it all out on the field, sports, for his what could have been his one and only number. Like, of course he's, you know, he's America's gay sweetheart and he'll probably be fine. And he certainly can dance, but, he was my fave, but I really, as I said, was surprised by Josh. He really won me over. I kind of fell in love with him as well and love to watch him dance. I love watching dancing. And, what I love about this show is that it, puts me in a position to think that I know things about dancing, which I don't. That's part of the fun of it, is that you can like argue with the judges. Like, I don't know what a foxtrot is supposed to look like, but Will, you've never watched the show before. You said, are you going to watch the remainder of this teeny seasonette, as Tom dubbed it?
I probably not, if just because I want to just kind of freeze it in this moment where it's perfect. But
are you rooting for anyone for the
I'd like to see Adam Rippon win, just because I think that he, to me, feels like it's very rare that you have someone that transitions over from sports to the point where you kind of forget that they were even an athlete at one point. He looks like the type of guy that's going to be able to do that. He's just so naturally charismatic. So, and frankly is on the good side of the force, is probably the best way to put that. So like, he's a good person and like, he's like active about being a good person. So, I would like to see him do well, just cause he's someone that I'd like to see the 15 minutes, kind of keep going. I was actually rooting for Arike a lot just cause I'm such a big fan of hers. But, now that she's gone, and then Kareem, just to be like, I'm almost kind of relieved that he's gone, just because I was afraid he would fall. But but nevertheless, I probably won't watch, but I will check in and see who won. Another reason I probably won't watch. It's funny, the physical worry about Kareem falling over is actually the same emotional worry I have about Tanya Harding. Yeah. And I kind of don't want to see that. I just don't want to be around for when that happens.
Just before we go on that, the first dance she did on the first episode, they got such high marks that had to be a producer bump, right? Like that did not, I mean,
for her to be potentially at risk when she was in the bottom three?
Decent, they got decent marks in the dance. I see. I think America brought that vote down. America, for recognizing truth.
For once.
Making the right choice again. Good job.
It was like, oh, she's got to stay for a couple.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And her dance, she did not deserve to stay for more than the first.
Anyway. No, I thought her second dance was better than the first one, but I agree. And this is obvious. This is also a good comeback vehicle for her, for the same reason that we were saying earlier, figure skaters do well. Like, she knows what she's doing. Anyway, Sarah, are you going to keep watching?
Yeah, I think so. Cause it's only two more, and you know where you can skip. Mm-hmm. And when they're sort of like talking about like inspiration during the practice, it's like, right. I don't care. Like, I will be peeing and getting another glass of water. Like, no thanks. So it's, you know, it's low commitment. And also, like, Jenny is just like on my nads now, and I just want to see her eliminated. Like, I'm not even about who's going to win. It's like, you know, being in the postseason of being like, well, I don't really have a dog in this hunt, but as long as the Nationals choke again, I'm all set.
Yeah, don't shit on Tessa Thompson's girlfriend song. Yeah,
maybe the bear from Tanya Harding's dance sequence will eat her.
It is time to go around the dial. Before we do, I just want to say that might have been our longest first segment in years. And it was Dancing with the Stars. Go figure. Tara Ariana.
It's longer than the show itself.
Where are we going?
Just for you, Kim Reed. Hey, Kim. A brief note about Good Girls, which just ended its first season. And we were all surprised and pleased to see got renewed for a second season on NBC. This was a show that I didn't really have hugely high hopes for, and it was always very surprising. So the premise is Christina Hendricks and Mae Whitman are sisters. They are friends with Retta. And the three of them are having various financial problems for a variety of reasons. And so they get the idea to rob Mae Whitman's grocery store where she works as a cashier. And it turns out they come away with like way, way, way more money than they thought. Because it turns out this grocery store is laundering counterfeit cash for a local crime boss. And they get more and more embroiled with this guy. They get into various other kinds of criminal activities with him. The most interesting one is they import a bunch of counterfeit cash from Canada. This is supposedly takes place in Michigan, but it's very clearly Atlanta, like every show on television. But they smuggle this the cash back rolled up in rolls of wrapping paper, and they don't even know what they're bringing back until they get it. And then they hire a bunch of other women sort of to be secret shoppers and go and take the fake cash to stores, spend it on stuff, and then return it and for real cash. And that's how they're laundering all this money. Like, so there's fascinating, like, process stuff that happens. The characters are all really likable. Obviously, these three actresses are incredibly likable and have proven themselves in a million other shows. They have great friend chemistry among the three of them. What's his face? Matthew Lillard is Christina Hendricks' shitty husband, who is like 100% committed to being as shitty as possible in that Matthew late era Matthew Lillard way, where he's like, "Well, I guess I'm this guy now." Like, to the point where he fakes a cancer diagnosis to get back into her house after she's kicked him out. God. A lot of stuff happens that is not really explained. I mean, some of it, I guess they can push off until later. Like, how are they possibly going to explain how they have all this cash when they have to file their income taxes, for example? Like, they have to launder it for themselves once they've exchanged the fake money for real money. But it was always really surprising and good. And I love the relationship between the three women at the center of it. And I have to give a special shout out to the music supervisor, because something about it for a network show, all of the music choices was stuff that I'd never heard before. It's not like fucking Hallelujah over the closing montage. It was like always really new and surprising, and made the show seem more daring and more expensive in a weird way. And I tweeted this, and our past guest of the show, Eve Beatty, agreed. And that music supervisor tweeted us back and was like, "Thanks. Hope we get to do more." And now they do. And so everybody's happy. So all of Good Girls season one will be on Hulu. It's probably on the NBC app as well. Check it out. It's not perfect, but it's really strong. And I'm glad they get to do more, because I think there's stuff that they could refine. If you like Claws, this might be something that you would enjoy. It has some of this, some similar kind of female crime boss friendship stuff. Allison Tolman is one of the secret shoppers too, and she's great. And for my plug, I'm going to mention all of our various epic old school recaps. Allison Lohuff has just finished Call the Midwife with season 7. But we still have Westworld by Eve Beatty, our last guest, and The Americans by me. So check those out.
It's your turn, Will. Will, take it away.
All right. So as you guys know, everybody has the shows that you don't like anymore and have no reason to watch and don't particularly enjoy, and you still keep going with them out of some sort of obligation to no one, actually. I have that. I'm really, really bad with this. You guys talked about Archer on the last show. I have not really enjoyed Archer in like 3 years, and I still watch every episode dutifully. I've gotten to the point where I will find something to do specifically during the time that I watch the show. I gotta pass the time. The way people always are like, oh, that's a good laundry watching show. I actually will find the excuse to do laundry so I can get through Archer. So I have a few shows like that, and it's fine because, you know, it's cancel bear season, as the idea goes. And there are two shows that are right on the cusp of whether they're going to make it. And coincidentally, if we're going to do a little plug, I host a show for Sports Illustrated called The Will Leach Show, which is good because I was the fourth pick and to host it. And we recently, we've had two guests of two of the people that are on, two stars of two of the shows that are on. We had Drew Powell, who is on Gotham, who plays Solomon Grundy, who is also from the Midwest, a small Midwestern town.
Solomon Grundy, crush, super friends.
Yes, exactly. It's a shame. He's like Groot. That's the only line that he says the entire show. and so apparently that's at 40% now. That is actually, Drew is a wonderful guy and I enjoy his company. I do not like the show and I just want it to go away because I'm going to watch it forever if it doesn't. So it's at 40% right now. So another guest we had this week was Stephanie Beatriz, who plays Rosa Diaz on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is at 35%. Now this show I love and I absolutely do not want it to go away. So I'm just going to, and she's wonderful. They're both wonderful people and I want their shows to continue so they can be happy and have things go well because they've already debased themselves enough by going on my show. So the least I can do here is say I want them it's to pretend that I want both shows to be renewed because I want to watch them both, though in fact I actually just want to keep watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine and I need Gotham to just to let me go.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine really has been funny this season, I have
it
to
really
say
has, yeah.
I didn't even know Gotham was still on, so I guess that's a public service announcement.
Not
that I'm
going to
start
terrible.
Watching it again, but
it's not terrible, it's just I'm running out of laundry. I'm running out of laundry that needs folded.
It seems to me like if you had to explain Gotham, it's like imagine a 5-year-long Phantom Menace. It's just like
no thanks,
kid. Everything you already know. Yeah. You know, it's just like it's. The culture of the prequel just needs to take a decade long rest in Hollywood, I think, and just like let's tell stories that we don't know. And yeah, that would be fun, wouldn't it, Hollywood?
Yeah, young Sheldon feels like someone taking on a dare of like, what's the stupidest thing we could do a prequel of? Big Bang Theory.
Oh, and that kid is good, too, and it pisses me off that he's going to be stuck doing that forever and will probably be, you know, Brad Renfro'd by life.
Well, Will, you already mentioned dark. Your...
you can get it through Amazon channels or SI TV. We've done 11 episodes. We had Ron Livingston on the last one, which my favorite thing about Ron Livingston is pretty much everyone from every segment of society has, they think, oh, that's the guy from, and he is literally, everybody's different. Whether it's Band of Brothers or Office Space or Sex and the City, or like some people even in Search. I have like a niece who knows him from Search Party. So, it's a very fun show. I cannot dump. I figure it's only a matter of time until they realize, oh, this was an incredibly stupid idea to get the show to Will. So, please, I'm gonna watch enough of them so I can prove someday that I did them because they're streaming and I have no hard copies, which means they'll surely go offline and no one will believe that they ever actually happened. So,
we'll link it in the show notes, but you have a podcast as well.
Yes, I have a podcast called with Grierson and Leach, where I used to with my closest friends in the world, Tim Grierson, who of course worked with me and Tara at Yahoo back in the day. The Yahoo, the media company that I thought was really horrible, was actually just an auger for what every media company would eventually become. but was also horrible.
We're laughing through our tears.
So it's funny because it's horrible. Yeah. We have a weekly podcast called Grierson and Leach where we go, it's just basically, it's us pretending to be Siskel and Ebert like we did when we were driving in our car when we were 15, driving from seeing Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, being like, I don't know, on the way back to our hometown. So it's me, and it's called Grierson and Leach. You can get it on iTunes and Spotify and all those sort of podcast places.
We'll link that as well.
Charity Bunting.
Dear White People returned for its second volume last weekend on Netflix. I liked the first season pretty well, and season two is definitely even better. It's still kind of too much telling versus showing, but that's also kind of what the show is. And it really settles into itself after the first couple of episodes and feels more assured and less reactive and like sort of defensive about how it communicates things. Episode 8 is particularly good and also typical of that. It's very raw, this fight between the two characters that kind of, as Patty Chase once notoriously said, the fight is having you. It could have felt like a debate exercise with a chemistry experiment thrown in, and sometimes the show does feel like that. But there's a big reveal at the end of the season that I think Tara Ariano would particularly enjoy.
Excellent.
Being a big fan of Gus Fring, you really can't beat one, finding out that Joelle and I are driving sisters from another mister. Like, just the explosion of cursing was like, I already loved the character, and I was like, my people. And number two, a takedown monologue by Tessa Thompson, who starred in the movie version of this property. In the finale, it's quite satisfying. The show is unique, I think, and has stopped apologizing sort of in text for what it's like. And it was really enjoyable. I burned through the whole thing in a weekend. And if you forgot that the show was coming back, it did. And you should check it out.
Yeah, I think I'm halfway through. I thought the episode about the one character's unplanned pregnancy was particularly strong, especially
yes.
the way it ended, I thought was really good and well done.
Yes. And well, they really played that perfectly.
I think so.
Also played perfectly is Reggie's entire wardrobe. And if anyone can tell me where I can get that jacket, it's probably many, many thousands of dollars. I don't care. I need to know. I'm looking for that Stan collar style in my own life, even though it's about to be summer in New York. Again, don't care. So if you can source that for me, I am here for you at Tomato Nation on Twitter. For my plug, I have a podcast called Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. Strangely enough, it's me and Mark Blankenship talking about songs. This week, we are dropping our 100th episode with a huge assist from one Tara Ariano. I think you will enjoy the surprise journey that we go on. We certainly did. What's going to happen? Who can say? But we're pretty excited that we got through 2 years and 100 episodes, so give it a listen.
Yeah.
That's Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, parentheses, with an assist from Tara.
And congratulations on your 100th episode. Well done.
Thank you.
So, you know, when you move and you have like one set of deadlines where you're living and you got one set of deadlines where you're going and they never match up properly and you always end up living out of a suitcase or a knapsack or something like that for anywhere from 1 to 11 days. So I was there.
Yes.
The last couple days of that period of time, I also did not have any Wi-Fi where I was staying. So I had to end up going to this world's smallest micro hotel in Waimea. if you're traveling to Waimea, please do yourself a favor. Do not book at the Kamwela Inn.
I don't think anyone's going to be traveling to Hawaii for very
just gonna say,
little while.
Nowhere pretty near sure that, everybody's
guys.
Safe.
Nowhere near that. Anyways, the only thing I had where I can actually watch TV, because the TV was also like not really working, like the terrestrial TV or satellite TV. So I had Netflix basically. So I was trawling Netflix for shows to watch. And the one I came across, and it might've been the daviest thing I've done in a while. It's a British show called Myths and Monsters. And it is sort of the programming they used to show on History Channel like 15 years ago. It's about 6 or maybe 8 episodes, and the title's a little misleading. It's mostly myths, not so much on the monsters. Like, the first episode is all about sort of the Joseph Campbell, Hero of a Thousand Faces sort of stuff. But the great things about the show is, one, it's hosted by this extremely, extremely British guy in a gentleman's library, and the structure of the show is that he is telling a single myth in little chunks after each commercial break to sort of illustrate what the whole episode, the episode as a whole, is about. And each one is him. Each opening is him basically reading from a book and just sort of gently closing it and then talking to the camera. It is so a 1970s show filmed today. It has these animated bits where they're explaining the myths that are like, you remember the first wave of internet animation on YouTube and stuff where people are making their own shows and they're just doing whatever in Flash? It is like one small level above that. Like, they are, the first episode has the telling of the tale of, oh boy, I forget. It's like a Slavic tale. Kalash, is that his Kalash? There's this one part where this demon speeds away, and the way they show it is like they have a torso of this old man, and the bottom of it is like the Tasmanian devil dirt swirl, and they're, one is moving and the other isn't, and it says him sliding across the screen. It is so jank, yet somehow in the context of knowing that the show was made on the dime but trying its best to look expensive, is fantastic. And actually, like, the contents are a little bit better done than you usually get for this kind of show. Like, they actually put some thought into the structure of each episode, and you do end up learning some things as much as you can from this kind of show, which is a far cry from the type of shows you get about myths and monsters today, which I've complained about in this podcast before, but all boiled down to Bigfoot. He runs around the forest. He's got big feet. He could be an ape. We don't know. You be the judge. No, don't fucking be the judge. Don't make me be the judge. You tell me whether this is fucking real or if it's not. Is this myth, like this myth, you know, explain why did, where it came from, why we still sort of follow it today. Just don't, like, put it on me. Don't have a show called Are There Aliens? And then the last fucking words are you be the judge. Like, God damn it. Anyway, so it's not that kind of show. It's a very stately British history show. And if you're in into that kind of nerd nip, Myths and Monsters on Netflix, I highly recommend it.
I have two things to just piggyback on to that with Dave. Mm-hmm. One is our, speaking of you be the judge, our old friend Rob Lowe of the Lo-Files. Oh, yeah. Is coming to Austin to do a live show where I think he's reading from his book.
Oh, okay.
Like, it's probably his selected monologues about, and stuff. I don't think he's coming to reveal.
Is his book about myths and monsters?
No, it's about himself. Oh. Is he a myth or a monster? Maybe that's what we will actually discover.
You decide. I think you're Canadian and I'm still convinced of it. No, that's not true. It is true. Anyways, I got nothing to plug.
A second thing.
Hey, hang on. I do have something to plug. Tara's second thing.
Something for a future Around the Dials that I don't know if you know about, so I'm announcing this so that you can be aware. Ancient Aliens season 13 just started. Lucky season 13!
All right. Looking forward to it. It's time for the canon. Submitting this week is Will. Take it away, Will.
I'm very nervous about this because this is my third appearance on Extra Hot Great, and I am 2 for 2 in canon submissions. To be fair, one of them was a Louis episode, so I'm feeling great.
Ooh, it was an earlier time.
But yes, it was back when Louis C.K. seemed like a completely upstanding guy.
So here's my question. You know, recently, we're going to get into it later, but there has been some decredentializations in things recently.
In the industry.
With doctors and whatnot. Maybe we should think about that and make Will to that 500.
Oh, no. That's not, I couldn't have known.
I just heard his heartbreak over the airwaves.
You can see the actual frame when Will, he just heartbreaks.
Okay. All right, Bob Odenkirk, lead a clean life. Okay.
Seriously.
We'll see how this goes. Okay, so I'm going to talk about Better Call Saul, Season 3, Episode 5, Chicanery, which you can find on Netflix and all sorts of other, I guess just Netflix. The episode, I should probably just start out with saying that, like, I was a huge Breaking Bad fan, but I will confess, I've kind of discovered in the last year. I wrote a newsletter, by the way, tinyletter.com/WilliamFLeach if you want to subscribe. I wrote one a while back about how I think Better Call Saul may have actually passed Breaking Bad for me. And this was the episode that did it. Breaking Bad was ultimately about a person who thought he was good, realizing he was terrible. But I think Better Call Saul is actually a little more interesting, since it's about a bad person who desperately, tragically wants to be good, and how much trouble he causes for all the people who love him, and how he still can't help but fail. Because, of course, for the first two seasons of Better Call Saul, the show makes a good case for Jimmy McGill, who's played, of course, by Bob Odenkirk, who, remember, is actually evil in Breaking Bad. And it's always kind of funny to go back and watch after watching these three seasons of Better Call Saul, which Jimmy McGill is such a likable character, even when he does bad things. You go back and watch Breaking Bad, you're like, oh, he wanted to murder people constantly. he really becomes like a truly terrible person because he was so funny and Odenkirk's such a likable actor. But you actually take him out of context, you realize, oh, he was actually horrible. But the show Better Call Saul treats him as kind of like this likable ne'er-do-well whose heart's in a good place. He just can't help but wonder how in the world he could actually turn in to Saul Goodman. Well, season three, and specifically Chicanery, kind of shows us how it might happen and how it makes him a little bit more terrified for what we know is actually inevitable. So in this episode, Jimmy and his brother Chuck, played by Michael McKean, are destined for the courtroom. Jimmy, as he tends to do, he falsifies legal records to help out his wonderful girlfriend and partner, Kim, played by Rhea Seehorn, who is, I would argue, is the true star of the show. She's absolutely wonderful in the show. But he falsifies the legal records to help her out without her knowing. Chuck figures it out and accuses Jimmy of the crime, but to keep her big client, Mesa Verde, that she got away from Chuck's firm, and to keep Jimmy's license intact, Jimmy has to convince a jury that Chuck's disability, which is an aversion to electricity, is a mental illness rather than a physical allergy, which we actually, having watched the show, know is in fact true. Thus, this law show, which actually very rarely has courtroom scenes, finally gets a big courtroom scene, and that is Chicanery. But the show starts with an important flashback to when Jimmy helped his brother fool his ex-wife, who is coming to visit his crazy house where there's no electricity, into believing that everything is fine, that he doesn't have this illness, and he basically rewires his entire house. Their conversation is Jimmy and Chuck in a nutshell. Jimmy is a master of deception, but deep down a good person who really does want to help his brother.
So, you got a phone, the yard's half mowed, the sockets and stuff are looking A-okay. I'm going to check again just to make sure. We're almost there.
Good. What do you think? On? Off.
Oh, I think off.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, off it is.
Chuck, you sure this is the right play? I mean, in my experience, the bigger the lie, the harder it can be to dig out.
I'll cross that bridge when I come to it.
So, okay, now we're back in real time, which is to say still previous to Breaking Bad. It's all very confusing. You have to keep it all together. We see Jimmy meeting with the crime lord vet from Breaking Bad, the veterinarian who always sets up all is apparently the head of the Albuquerque crime syndicate. He sets up a hands guy. He wants to meet a hands guy. And of course, we have the notion of what happens a lot on Better Call Saul, which is we flash forward to, oh, that guy shows up in Breaking Bad. That will come up later as well. And then we see Kim warning her Mesa Verde clients, the one she got because of Jimmy's lie, that this hearing is coming and it might get public, but they're cool with it because Kim is a great attorney. And then we're in the courtroom. It's fun because like a lot of Better Call Saul episodes, particularly this year, cut between Mike Ehrmantraut and Gus Fring, neither one of whom are in this episode. This is all a Jimmy episode, a Jimmy and Chuck and Kim episode, which I have to say is fine with me because I actually prefer their story to as much as I love Gus Fring, I actually prefer their story on this show to the backdrop of the Breaking Bad stuff. So they get in the courtroom. They've shut off all the electricity other than the emergency exit sign for Chuck because he's so powerful and beloved and rich in Albuquerque that they'll bend over backwards for him still. And after Howard, the leader of Chuck's law firm, tries to talk him out of testifying, the case is on. So the last half hour of the show is just the case itself to get Jimmy disbarred. After the disbarment attorney makes his case against Jimmy, Kim, who we've just seen preparing for the hearing with Jimmy, showing that they clearly love each other even while she's still a little wary of all the messes he puts her in, makes her opening statement and questions Howard. We cut to Chuck. Chuck is in his house practicing his emotional testimony alone in his home, establishing him as inherently phony in a way that even Jimmy can't quite approach.
Yes. Yes, my brother has many admirable qualities. In some ways, I can say I admire him. Too cold. I love my brother. I'm a Ted Kaczynski's brother loved him too, and he wanted to help. And sanctimonious. I love my brother. He's a good person. He has good in him. But the law is too important. Be right there, Howard. The law is too important.
It's a good reminder that Chuck is only pretending to make this about the law, as we'll see later on in the courtroom scene. It's another reminder again, he's alone. He's just practicing his lies, which is, of course, what he's constantly accusing Jimmy of doing. Chuck doesn't respect his brother, and he doesn't want him to be a lawyer because he needs to be better than him. So after they play the damning tape of Jimmy's big speech at the end of season two, they got us here in the first place. Chuck enters the courtroom, and everyone has to get rid of their electronics. The episode has been particularly precise to this point, directly leading to this confrontation. Now, this is the sort of show where not everyone is always explaining their feelings, which is why it was particularly genius to make their big confrontation in a courtroom where they are under oath and have no choice and have to talk directly to each other. As Chuck is walking in, he bumps into Huell. If you remember Huell, who is actually the actor who plays Huell is thinner than he was on Breaking Bad, which makes you realize, oh, he just eats a lot in between Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. The show is usually pretty careful about its Breaking Bad flashbacks, and this one, as usual, is perfectly timed. Chuck first is questioned by the prosecutor, which allows him to state his case against Jimmy.
Mr. McGill, I have only one more question for you. Do you hate your brother?
Absolutely not. I love my brother. There's nothing malicious in Jimmy. He has a way of doing the worst things for reasons that sound almost noble. But what I know for sure is that the law is too important to be toyed with. It's mankind's greatest achievement. The rule of law, the idea that no matter who you are, your actions have consequences. And the way my brother treats the law, it breaks my heart. That's why I did what I did. Not to hurt him, but to protect something that I hold sacred.
Thank you, Mr. McGill. The state bar rests.
What's great about this is Chuck is both lying and telling the truth. He doesn't care about the law. He just wants to stick it to his brother. But he's also right. Jimmy is careless with the law, and he's actually a danger to the profession, as we find out in Breaking Bad and increasingly on Better Call Saul. The problem is not just his willingness to cheat. It's that he's so good at it, which we are about to see. Right before Jimmy takes over to the questioning, his secretary brings in Chuck's ex-wife, having told her about his disease for the first time, to rattle him. And then the game is on, as we see these two characters who have never been truly honest with each other, finally having no choice but to do so.
Well, there's been a lot of fuss about it, but you and I have never really talked about this tape you made.
We lost the opportunity when you burglarized my house to destroy it.
Fair enough. And I was in the wrong there, but still, I'd like to try and follow your story of why and how you recorded it.
Oh, is this where you claim the tape is spurious? That it's not really your voice?
No, that's me on the tape. But still, I have some questions. Like the recorder, it must have hurt like hell for you to touch that.
There was a degree of discomfort, that's true.
And where did you hide it? I mean, the sound's pretty clear, so it wasn't in the couch cushions, was it?
Tucked under a space blanket, out of sight.
Wow. So there's no chance I would see it. Not with the state your place was in, isn't that right?
I suppose.
Would you like to set the scene for the disciplinary committee? Tell them, you know, what your house looked like at the time of the recording.
Objection. Relevance?
Well, the circumstances of the recording are materially relevant. How can you know what the tape really means unless you know what was going on when it was recorded?
Overruled, the witness could answer the question.
I covered most of the walls with foil scrim craft insulation. I also hung a number of space blankets. Compact mylar sheets. They insulate and protect against mild electromagnetic radiation.
All right, so shiny insulation and space blankets all over the walls and the ceiling. It was like being inside of a disco ball.
Do you have a point?
Jimmy is setting up how crazy Chuck has gotten, and he's waiting to drop the hammer that he's not actually suffering from any sort of physical disease. But also, like Chuck, he's also not doing it for the law. He really needs to show emotionally how his brother is the monster that he really believes he is. So Jimmy has to prove the disease is psychosomatic for the whole world to see, and so he can show his brother that he is a great lawyer too. Which brings us back to Huel and all the threads of Jimmy's plans coming together at once. He establishes that Chuck is currently away from electricity, or at least thinks he is, but then lays down the hammer. Huel planted a phone on him, and he's had electricity on him the whole time. It's all in his head, and Jimmy gets the saddest victory ever.
God, Jimmy. Don't you know by now this is real? I feel this. It's a physical response to stimuli. It's not a quirk. What do I have to do to prove it to you?
I don't know, Chuck. Could you reach into your breast pocket and tell me what's there?
What now?
Can you tell the court what that was?
Battery.
Mr. Chairman, please. You recognize that man in back? His name is Huel Babineau. He's on our witness list. You bumped into him in the stairway. He'll testify he planted this fully charged battery on you over an hour and a half ago.
Hour and 43 minutes.
An hour and 43 minutes. Thank you, Mr. Babineau. And you felt nothing.
No. It's a trick. It has
enough
to...
is enough. I submit that Mr. McGill's mental illness is a non-issue. If he were schizophrenic, it wouldn't take away from the fact that the defendant...
I am not crazy! I am not crazy. I know he swapped those numbers. I knew it was 1216. One after Magna Carta, as if I could ever make such a mistake. Never. Never. I just couldn't prove it. He covered his tracks. He got that idiot at the copy shop to lie for him.
Mr. McGill, please, you don't have to go.
You think this is something? You think this is bad? This chicanery? He's done worse. That's billboard. Are you telling me that a man just happens to fall like that? No, he orchestrated it. Jimmy. He defecated through a sunroof. And I saved him. And I shouldn't have. I took him into my own firm. What was I thinking? He'll never change. He'll never change ever since he was 9. Always the same. Couldn't keep his hands out of the cash drawer. But not our Jimmy. Couldn't be precious Jimmy. Stealing them blind. And he gets to be a lawyer? What a sick joke. I should have stopped him when I had the chance. And you have to stop him. You.
And then we end with Chuck, defeated, staring at the exit light, ill, and now actually worse than he ever was. And this is the pivot point we've been waiting for, when Jimmy begins his inexorable lurch to becoming the monster that is Saul Goodman. Now, I will be careful of spoilers as I can, but this is the moment that leads to the terrible thing that happens at the end of season 3. And that moment surely will push Jimmy into darker and darker places in season 4 and make me, like everyone else, very, very worried about poor, wonderful Kim Wexler, the only person who we don't know what happens to in this prequel. Because eventually he becomes Saul Goodman, and the surprise of Better Call Saul is that I am finding myself even more transfixed by the transformation of Jimmy into Saul than I ever was Walter White into Heisenberg. Better Call Saul is the rare, maybe only spinoff that reaches and maybe even surpasses the heights of the original, and Chicanery is its best, most wrenching episode. I humbly and finally, sorry, submit it for the canon.
I'll go first. Thank you so much for bringing this to us. This is... such a strong episode, and I think highlights, even though it's not typical in the sense that it doesn't have Mike or Gus, who's just come onto the scene in this season, but it foregrounds what I feel like Better Call Saul is really about, which is the McGill brothers and what I've talked about before. I didn't make up this idea. I learned it in school in my Shakespeare class, but the idea that tension between characters arises from identity and opposition. And you see this as you laid out so beautifully in your case, Will, of like what Chuck and Jimmy have in common and what divides them. And what's interesting here is seeing that what Chuck is trying to do is pull a Jimmy move. Like when he entrapped him into making this confession, that was a short, grift that he was trying to run on Jimmy, not realizing, as he unfortunately learns by the end of this episode, you can't grift Jimmy. He's ungriftable. He's going to grift you back way worse because he is way better at this than you are. And, you know, the tragedy is that Chuck was always against Jimmy, even when Jimmy really did legitimately try to go straight. Back in season one, we saw that Harry Howard was ready to hire him at the firm, and Chuck stopped him. And that was maybe the pivot point of Jimmy's life at that earlier flashback stage where he could have gone straight. But then Chuck fucked him, and he decided to do this, or was, you know, I guess arguably driven into doing what he's been doing instead. And so seeing Chuck get his comeuppance is terrible, because these are brothers that on some level love each other, or at least at some point, Jimmy really did love Chuck, but Chuck is awful. Chuck did really bad things. Chuck, it does not have altruistic motives even buried deep anywhere the way Jimmy does. Chuck is just a dick. And seeing Jimmy manipulate him into this admission, and seeing all of the phases of the story that got him there, even the part in the flashback, which this was the first flashback of this season, as I recall, that cold open scene with Rebecca, when even there they have part of the story is that they sell to her about why the lights are out, is they mixed him up with someone who transposed, by transposing two numbers of his address with another person's address. So it's like all of these echoes just highlight how smart Jimmy is and how tragic it is that his brilliance is being perverted in this way. But at the same time, he learned it from watching you, Chuck. So this was such a good episode, really absolutely a strong point, or a high point of season three and of the whole series to date. So thank you for bringing it to us. Excellent choice. Sarah.
I am glad that I'm not the only one who, I liked Breaking Bad a lot and admired it greatly. But I love Better Call Saul in a way that I never quite loved Breaking Bad. And we'll see if that feeling continues, or, you know, depending on how long the show goes on. This episode, I think, perfectly encapsulates what this show, what drives this show, which is everything that Tara just said, that it runs on this conflict, and this idea of like Chuck as, Chuck trying to position himself as like Jimmy's better self, but he's actually Jimmy's worst self.
Yeah.
And this showdown has been coming for so long at this point in the narrative, and you like, now that we're past it in the narrative, like in the life or the timeline of the show, you can see that they waited exactly long enough to do it. Like, this was the perfect point. They didn't drag it out any further. And this also highlights the absolutely brilliant, and I think undersung by the culture, performance of Michael McKean as Chuck. Mm-hmm. This is a bravura performance as that asshole older sibling, a company that I cannot discount myself from. It's this simultaneously like off-puttingly smarmy, arrogant, know-it-all dickhead, and like an underminer, and like the way they shoot him, like physically where the camera is, that it's always like beneath him, sort of looking up his nose a little bit as he's looking down his. But at the same time, he is this like pitiable, isolated, ill creature that you always feel a little sorry for, perhaps because we're still seeing him through Jimmy's eyes to some extent, and the admiration and compassion that he up to a point has for Chuck before it comes down to like it's destroy or be destroyed, and he chooses the former. And I think you're right on that. This is a pivot point for the transformation into Saul. I also agree that Kim Wexler is the best. And this is, I think, the most true to life depiction of an attorney that I've ever seen. Not that I don't love Law and Order theatrics, but this is the closest to like actual attorneys that I know in life.
Yeah, I meant to say that too, that I love the courtroom scenes for how slowly and infinitesimally the testimony advances the story. Like, it's not, and wouldn't you say that blah 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 blah, like,
it's the truth,
right? It's all that, it's like tiny incremental progress in cross and direct. That's really well done and effective and real.
Yeah. This is a wonderful show. This is my husband's favorite show. Periodically, he, like every few weeks, he's like, so when is that coming back again? I'm like, probably not till September, honey. And he's like, and then I'll find him with his headphones in, like, just watching it on Netflix. Like, it holds up to repeat viewing. I think that the fear early on was that it would rely too heavily on, like, Easter eggs for Breaking Bad super fans.
Yeah,
but
yes,
my husband got like 3 episodes into Breaking Bad and sort of watched along with me at the end. And it's not like he didn't get it. He didn't dislike it. He just wasn't motivated to go back to it. And he still thinks this is a fantastic show. And this is one of the few shows where there is not the actor complaining that he doesn't believe the moment or whatever. Like, I couldn't make him watch The Leftovers, but he loves this. So who knows? But enough of this episode of Dan is a Weirdo. Back to Extra Hot Great. This was a fantastic presentation, and I think you hit on all the reasons that this is an excellent show and an excellent episode and very typical. And Sarah's particular canon thing is, did I want to keep watching? And I got halfway into the next episode before I realized what was going on. So well done. David T. Cole.
First of all, chicanery is such a fun word. It's right up there with tomfoolery and stuff like that. You know, there's one, I don't know if it's a short story or a novel, but there's a, who's the dude that wrote Danny Kravitz?
Duddy Kravitz? Mordecai Richler.
Mordecai Richler. He wrote a short story called What for the Two Who Stole My Shovel. And this is like one of those words that I always imagine is in that book. I think Breaking Bad is an easier show to like. I think it's for a lot of people, for better or for worse. Like, you're not going to see pictures of Heisenberg on next to Tony Montana from, you know, Scarface, you know, as far as pop culture stuff goes, right? And I think this show rewards you in a different way than Breaking Bad. Like, Breaking Bad's journey, in comparison to Jimmy's journey, you know, Walter versus Jimmy, is a little simpler, right? You know, it's this good father who discovered he had a talent for doing bad things and lost the thread. And Jimmy's journey is sort of a good guy who becomes a weasel, but I think the path is much more tortured. So it's a harder show to watch and get into, but I think it rewards you if you are watching it. You know, like, it's just like, surprisingly, it's got much more going on than Breaking Bad. Not necessarily the machinations of what is physically going on in that world. You know, obviously Breaking Bad had a lot of crazy, you know, Scooby-Doo drug schemes and stuff like that. But this is like, as much as Breaking Bad was character driven, this is like one more level up. And this episode really just sort of highlights how much the show is character based. And everything smart that Tara said is correct, and everything smart that, but I will say there is one part of this episode that gives me pause, and that is this. There is a courtroom break. I think it's one of the times they're trying to stall, or maybe it's just when they're coming in the morning, but Jimmy and Kim are standing next to a vending machine, and inside the vending machine, you can see one of the choices is Lay's barbecue chips. And Jimmy is leaning against the vending machine, eating some third unknown brand's barbecue chips. Now, I ask you, would a vending machine have the same type of snack down to the flavor, just two brands? The answer is no, they wouldn't. They would have one barbecue chips and the other one, you know, even if they had Utz and Lay's, you know, the Lay's would dominate your sour cream choices and your barbecue choices. And the Utz would have, you know, whatever, you know, dill pickle Utz or whatever they have that's unique. So, you know, is it canon worthy now? Who's to say?
I resent.
Now I really want crab chips. Thanks a lot, Dave.
No, this is obviously a really powerful episode of a very character-driven show. And not only, I think, doesn't Michael McKean doesn't really get enough credit, but do you know who character I really love that sort of like just swims under the radar? It's the guy who plays Hamlin.
Oh, yeah.
The part.
Patrick Fabian. Yeah, he's great.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
He, like, I think in lesser writer and lesser actor's hand, that guy would just be, you know, evil, just for me lawyer guy, right? And he would do everything for the firm because he owns the firm and fuck everybody else. But there is a certain genuine quality to him, you know, the whole little bit of the testimony about, we called him Jimmy Hustle. You know, like there is like you can see the affection there, even though at the end of the day, his bottom line is he needs to protect the firm against catastrophic failure. But you can still see that he is like a person underneath all that. And I think like it's the cast is so strong that it's hard to find a dud in it. And, you know, kudos to everybody involved there. But that guy, I just feel like he just nails that character. And the character is just like he's on the precipice of being a jerk. He's on the precipice of being relatable. And just like inhabiting that Twilight Zone makes him such a perfect lawyerly type.
Yeah. I mean, it's the strength of the Breaking Bad-iverse that you feel like you could follow any character and you would get an interesting story out of it. And like the idea that you could spin off Howard Hamlin into his own show, but what is it like to be running a white shoe law firm at like a second tier American city and be like the hottest shit in this weird arena? Like, you know, that could be an interesting story to follow too. Who knows where the future may bring us.
I really enjoyed this episode a lot. It makes me think about the end. Like my theory about the end and why they're doing all these season opening Cinnabon black and white vignettes is that he at the end of the series will meet somebody from his past, will be a customer that pops up. And that's going to be like one of the last
My hopeful
shots.
Theory. One of the big fan theories on this is because, you know, he's in Omaha and Kim Wexler shows up a lot of times wearing a Kansas City Royal. I think there's been three different times where she's been my baseball nerd again. He's worn like three Kansas City Royals things. And so that's always been like a hint of, well, maybe he'll run into Kim. And it's funny because the last thing you would imagine on a prequel to Breaking Bad where he turns into Saul Goodman is a potential happy ending.
Yeah.
But I think it's telling how much that we like Jimmy McGill that we want to still, in spite of everything, want to have him and Kim find a happy ending.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, is it going to be a happy ending or is it going to be, you know, a life just caught up with you downer?
Or are they going to tell us at all? Because that might be something that, you know, Vince Gilligan is like, well, you know, I after the Tony Soprano thing, I was not able to have the ambiguous ending that I wanted on Breaking Bad because I didn't want to fucking hear about it from the entire internet forever. But we've moved on now. Not really. And hopefully I could just leave it open-ended.
Yeah, my money is on Kim being that person just because it kind of would make sense for Better Call Saul, assuming that something super terrible doesn't happen to her in the coming seasons, but also sort of wraps one show within the other, right? Like the fact that Kim left did not exist on Breaking Bad, but now she can come back at the end of Better Call Saul, which exists after the end of Breaking Bad, sort of ties the universe up, you know, kind of a puts one show in the baggie of the other.
Should we have a candy bet on it? Because I think she gets killed.
I don't know. I hope not. And I mean,
it would explain the nihilism of Saul Goodman, certainly.
Yeah, that's why I fear that is what happens.
I think it,
All right. Well,
this
anyways,
is not enough. Our lead topic. We should move on.
Okay, so let us put this to a vote. Tara Ariano, what say you?
Yay, no question.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too. That means Better Call Saul Season 3, Episode 5, Chicanery. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for the winner and the loser of the week. Who has our winner?
I have our winner. It is, well, it's really about losers, but the winner is criminal justice. Part the first, an arrest was made in the Golden State Killer case, as so ably written up in the late Michelle McNamara's book. And that book is being turned into a docuseries for HBO. Liz Garbus, I think, is at the helm.
Yes.
She, it's not going to be cheery. That's not what Garbus does, but she's excellent, and I can't wait to see what they do with it. As well, America's unfavorite TV dad, Bill Cosby, was convicted finally, second time around. And then his honorary doctorate from Yale was rescinded. He was erased from the TV and advertising halls of fame, and late addition from Tara Ariano Kennedy Center Honor and Mark Twain Prize, both withdrawn. And then I assume he stepped in some dog shit.
Do we need to say he was convicted of sexual assault, or like, does everyone, you know that?
I also also kicked out of the Baseball Hall of Fame, by the way. Not allowed.
By P. Rose. Not,
yes, yes.
Yeesh.
And loser of the week?
Well, loser of the week is Joe Piscopo, because apparently the real Stormy Daniels appeared in a cold open on SNL as herself. And he had to go on Fox News and fucking run his mouth asking, what do I tell my children about Stormy Daniels being on SNL?
Oh.
So I'm going to throw this to Twitter user @Varkentine, who wrote, you tell them you had to be forced by law on threat of jail to support them, Joe, which he did. Joe Piscopo doesn't pay his child support.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yikes. Well, speaking about paying the piper, do you know what time it is?
Time to Yadier Bill Cosby in the balls.
Oh, leave Yadi out of this.
Sorry. Not sorry.
I forgot.
Is it game time?
Oh, yeah, right. Correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a little while and there's been a lot of air travel on my recent past. This is the third game time of the season.
I think that's right.
And Sarah has 2 points. Everybody else has a big goose egg. Excellent. Today we are playing Lost in Translation from Dan Casino.
Hey.
Earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot great mini topic of his choosing. He writes, American TV shows have been staples on channels around the world for as long as there's been TV. But sometimes in an attempt to appeal to these foreign audiences, the names of the shows get a little twisted. In this game, we'll travel around the world. You'll get a name of a well-known American TV show in a country translated back into English. You have to guess the show. 2 points for a correct guess, 1 point for a correct guess after a hint. The hint will come in the form of the network it originally aired on and the years it ran. Make sense?
Yes.
So if indeed. I told you that people in Hungary watch Pure Heart Football, you'd know I was talking about Friday Night Lights.
Right.
And the hint would have been NBC and DirecTV 2006 to 2011. All right. Tara Ariano, can you please tell us about the steel mill situation?
I would love to. Sarah D. Bunting has 5 steel meals. I have 2 steel meals. The valued guest has 1. Will, you know how steel meals work? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Let's throw it to Picky to see our order today.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. Our order today is Sarah D. Bunting, Tara Ariano, Will Leach. Are we ready to play Lost in Translation?
Yes, sir.
Here we
go.
We're starting off with Italy. No one ever says Italy. Shows from Italy. Sarah, a mom for a friend. You can answer for 2 points. Or you can ask for a guess, ask for a hint after 1 point, but we're only going to accept 1 answer.
A mum for a friend. Oh, I see what you're saying. I am going to guess that is Gilmore Girls.
That is worth 2 points.
Hey.
Okay. Continuing our Italian round. Parents in blue jeans, Tara. Parents in blue jeans.
I'm going to also guess Family Ties?
That's a good guess. It's Family Ties adjacent. That's ABC 85 to 92, Growing Pains.
Oh.
All right, here's Will's first question. My friend Ricky.
My friend Ricky.
Guess out of
I'll
the
take
gate.
Hint. I'll okay, take the hint.
Take a hint. Correct answer after the hint worth 1 point. NBC and syndication, 82 to 87.
Silver Spoons?
Correct. Nice. Nice point. Back to Sarah. Bayside School. This show in Italy was known as Bayside School.
Or still in Italy. Saved by the Bell?
That is correct. 2 points. Still in Italy, guys. I'll let you know when we get out of Italy. We're going to be in Italy for a little bit. The Boys of Saturday Night.
Hint.
ABC, 1975 to 1979. This is a tricky one. It won't be tricky after you realize why it's called that.
Right.
I'm a little tempted to give you that clue because it is so tough. So I'm going to do that.
No. It's okay. Don't give me a pity clue.
Tara says, I don't want any asterisk victories.
I don't.
I'm fine with them.
I have no
idea. I'd like
idea.
To steal the pity clues.
All right.
It's only going to be for worth 1 point, though. Are you sure you want to waste your steel meal for a
no, no, answer? I'm just kidding. I don't
want to do that. Go ahead. I give up.
Okay. The Italians here are playing up the Saturday Night Fever connection to sell the show. Welcome back, Otter. It's the correct answer.
Rats. Yes.
All right. Back to Sarah.
Over to Will.
Over to Will is what I
now
meant.
I feel like I'm on the show. Now I feel like I'm truly here.
The Italian title translated back into English is Fasten Your Seatbelts. Traveling is Learning. Fasten Your Seatbelts. Traveling is Learning.
I have a temptation. I'm going to need to catch up. I'm going to give it a shot. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
No. That was my guess,
good
too.
Guess.
Mine, too.
Did not really account for the car part of this. That was PBS, 93 to 97. That's the Magic School Bus.
Oh, school buses don't have seatbelts.
That's a good
Fuck
question.
Fuck off, Italy.
That's a good
they
point.
They totally should, though. It's really weird that
they really should. They really should.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah, why don't they have seatbelts?
This is not our lead topic either.
Fathers Borrowed. Fathers Borrowed. This is for Sarah.
Fathers Borrowed?
Yeah.
I mean, if I ask for the hint, I'm going to be kind of mad at myself because I think I know what it is. But hint.
ABC, 1987 to 1995.
Motherfucker. It totally was Full House.
Yeah.
Full House for 1 point. All right. We leave Italy behind. We're now in France. My children need wine.
What?
Doc or not Doc? D-O-C. Doc or not Doc?
Doc or not Doc? Who's faking being a doctor? Oh, hint.
This is a good hint.
Okay, good.
NBC and ABC, 2001 to 2010.
Scrubs,
correct. Okay, now, continuing our little France tour. The Law of Numbers. The Law of Numbers.
Don't say number wang. That's not a real show.
The Law of Numbers.
I'll take the hint.
CBS, 2005 to 2010.
Numbers.
That's right.
All right. Wow.
All right.
Did you get that I had the S in a backwards or one of the
I could
backwards.
Totally hear it. Yes.
I tried to emphasize that.
I wonder if the French title actually had any threes in it. Maybe interesting to look up. Max the Menace. Max the Menace.
Max the Menace.
Correct.
Hint.
NBC and CBS, 1965 to 1970.
What? Oh, Get Smart?
Oh, nice.
All right, this is good. $200 plus expenses. I think the likelihood of knowing this without having watching the show is zero.
Okay, hint.
NBC, 1974 to 80.
Oh, God. I don't even know what was on NBC. I know it's not Three's Company. I don't know.
Whoops. It's not Three's Company. Sorry. Anybody want to take a crack at it for shits and giggles?
Charlie's Angels?
It's a Private Eye thing because it's...
Sarah said Charlie's Angels.
It's in that. It's the Rockford Files. It's in that.
Oh, sure.
Okay. This is to Will. The Brothers Scott. The Brothers Scott. Like the toilet paper.
Oh, is it Property Brothers?
It's not.
It's not.
What? Wait, isn't their name Scott?
Yes.
I can't help you if that's not the title they use.
Okay, all right.
This is from the WB and the CW, 2003 to 2012. That's One Tree Hill.
No.
One Tree Hill.
Right. Yeah. Right. Forgot their stupid name.
Note, the name must have gotten awkward when one of the brothers left the show. All right. If you don't get this, you haven't been listening to the podcast. The All Risk Agency. The All Risk Agency.
All Risk Agency?
Sarah.
I'm serious. You're going to lose points if you don't get this right on this podcast.
The All Risk Agency?
The fact that that's the French name of the show has come up on this podcast like
at least half
times.
A dozen times. Not only that, I've played the theme to this on air at least half a dozen times.
At least twice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah, I am going to be mad. Well, then I guess I better just guess and then get my shit and leave. Alias?
Oh, I thought you had it there for a second.
Steal me up.
Okay.
The A-Team.
A-Team is good.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And that was 2 points. We leave France, guys. We're now in Brazil. This is the roaming death squad round. Brazil. Here we go.
Jesus.
A crazy on TV. A crazy as a noun on TV.
A crazy on TV.
A crazy on TV.
Hint.
NBC 2006-2013.
30 Rock?
Yes.
Okay.
Nice. Nicely done. A spy.
Gonna guess Black Box.
A spy out of his game. For Will. A spy out of his game.
Hint.
USA Network. 2007-2013. Now, if it was me, the alternate title would have been Mo Yogurt, Mo Problems, but that's just me.
That doesn't mean anything to the millions of people who never watched this show.
Count me among those millions, so I'm out. My USA information is very low. That was my guess.
Burn Notice.
Great.
All right. That brings us into our score break.
Okay. Will has 2 points. I have 4 points. Sarah DeBunting has 6 points.
All right, guys, we're still in Brazil.
We don't have the Trivial Pursuit question, so no
they're still in the box.
Equalizer lands. They're in a box in the ocean.
Somewhere in the ocean right now. In the land of the rich. In the land of the rich from Brazil. What's the American show?
In the land of the rich. This could be anything, so I will need a hint.
Fox, 2003-2007.
The land of the rich.
Oh my Fox god! I'm gonna show. Be
so, yeah, Fox show.
Straddling the mid-aughts.
Like a mechanical bull. I don't know. Profit.
Incorrect. That is the OC.
Oh yeah, that OC. Thing.
All right, this is number 17.
Pretty Eagle.
Bard. From the prom. Barred from the prom. Tara. Barred from the prom.
It's so unlikely that any of the shows that I'm thinking of would have aired overseas, but overseas is a weird place where Shark, the James Woods legal drama, was still playing in Pakistan when I visited my mother there.
Really?
Thanks, Fox Crime Channel. Yeah, not new episodes, but like it was only
one
season.
What if it was new episodes?
Speaking of shows only for Pakistan. I think I had an asterisk about that on Fame Tracker once. I'm going to guess Barred from the Prom. I'm going to take a swing, and my swing is Freaks and Geeks. God damn it!
Oh, no!
Barred from the Prom is Beverly...
No one got barred from the prom on that show.
It's Beverly Hills 90210. Boo. Can't tell you how they do things in Brazil.
Fuck off, Brazil.
Shut up, Brazil.
S.O.S. Malibu. S.O.S. Malibu.
Baywatch?
Baywatch is correct.
Right.
Well done.
Back to Sarah. This is our last Brazil question. Inventing truths.
Inventing truths?
Yes.
Again, that could be 70% of the shows on TV, but I'll take a swing and go with Lie to Me.
Oh, I like that guess.
AMC 2007-2015. That's Mad Men. All right, now, of course, the round everybody was waiting for, the Bulgarian round.
Thank God.
Thank God.
Urban.
Finally, my Bulgarian sling box comes into play.
Urban Development Department for Tara.
Oh, Parks and Recreation? Yay! Oh,
Urban Development. Yes. Nancy sitting on the grass, Will. Nancy sitting on the grass.
Oh, I see what they did there. Nice work, Bulgaria.
Hint, please.
Showtime, 2005 to 2012.
Weeds.
Weeds, yes. Good for 1 point.
Yes.
This is definitely the hardest one we've ever encountered. Where are you, Doc? Oh, I'm sorry. This is not even that hard. Who are you, Doc?
Who are you, Doc?
I have a question. Yeah. Are any shows in here more than once with different names?
I don't think so.
Okay. Proceed, sir.
Hint.
Wait, let me just read you the clue again. Who are you, Doc? Because I screwed it up the first time. Still need that hint?
Yes, please.
Okay. BBC. Forever. Jesus.
Space! That is Doctor Who, I believe.
Correct. Okay. So what happened was... Bulgarian show, So What Happened Was...
Wasn't that an actual show, though?
Not
with what's his name from that thing?
Oh yeah,
Christopher something.
I have so many guesses, so I'm gonna. I'll take a hint.
CBS 2005-2014.
How I Met Your Mother.
How I Met Your Mother. All right, this is my favorite title for Will. In the Shoes of Satan.
No pressure, Will, but if you get this without a hint, we'll all be tied.
Heavens, well, then I probably should go for it. It's in the shoes of...
Satan.
Satan. In the shoes of Satan. Yeah, I'm going to stay close enough and go ahead and take my hint. Keep it at striking distance.
AMC 2008 to 2013.
Is it Breaking Bad?
It is Breaking Bad, correct.
All right.
All right. See you later, Bulgaria. Say hello to Germany. Nobody speaks German.
Yabo.
Schnell.
The Denver Clan. The Denver Clan.
The Denver Clan?
The Denver Clan? Asks Sarah, to which I say, correct.
I forget which one of these clans was in Denver, so let's take a guess. Since we don't have the Trivial Pursuit cards, Dynasty? Yay!
Yay!
Detective Laura Diamond. Detective Laura Diamond.
The Mysteries of Laura.
The Mysteries of Laura.
Good, my favorite actress.
Tennis rackets and guns. Two of Will's passions.
Yeah, this is our, yeah, this is our prom theme. This is actually our prom theme in Central Illinois. Yes.
Let me ask you this, Will, while you're thinking of the answer. Yeah. Have you ever hunted for the most dangerous game of all?
Tennis rackets?
Yes. Yes, using tennis rackets. I found them and they just beat me up.
It's tennis night in America.
Tennis rackets and guns. I need a hint.
Yeah. NBC 65 to 68. Let me give you just a really. Let me give you another hint. Starring,
you don't have to do that.
Well, I'm going to anyways.
Okay.
Starring somebody who was mentioned on this podcast.
Oh wow!
Got to be Tom Bergeron.
60. Well, pair that up with 65 to 68. Might not be a bad.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Laughing.
Any other guesses? I Spy.
I Spy.
Oh, sure.
All right.
Now I gotta go back to that sad place again.
Is this a better title? Murder is her hobby.
Vita Nickel. I'm gonna guess that's Murder, She Wrote.
Murder, She Wrote is correct, yes. Three girls and three boys.
The Brady Bunch.
The Brady Bunch, correct. Rush. Oh, sorry. That is it for Germany. We're now in Japan.
Uh-oh.
Rush of money in the Bering Sea. Rush of money in the Bering Sea.
A hint, please.
Discovery, 2005 to the present. 12 years running. 30 years running, maybe. Rush of money in the Bering Sea.
I don't know.
That is... I guess it's
the show we made Dave watch one time.
Nope, not that one.
It's not that one?
No, that's a new show. Bering Sea Gold or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that would be the trick answer. That would be the gotcha answer. This is Deadliest Catch.
Oh, would have gone with Ice Road Truckers.
What do I know? Score break, please.
Well, Will has 6 points, and Sarah and I are tied with 11 points each.
Can you guys
but
hear
only
our
one
dogs?
Of us has a dog barking outside.
That's the other thing. This house is a lot smaller. All right. We're still in Japan. We're just going to deal with the dogs, guys. It's part of the ambiance. Your show is Macaroni Rascals.
I think we've had Macaroni
recently
Rascals
in the news
before. Is that The Sopranos?
It is not.
What?
Steel Meal. Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore. Steel Meal.
Nicely done.
A little note. I'm told that this is a cleaned up translation. A more literal one wouldn't be okay on a family broadcast. No,
I'm
a little intrigued. All right. So this is for Tara. Fight. Super robot life form. Fight. Super robot life form. This is Japan still. Murray, how many times do I have to tell you we're recording a podcast?
Is it Transformers?
To Transformers. That's correct. Nice. Character name. Redacted. Beloved of the Crucifix. Character name redacted. Beloved of the Crucifix for Will.
A hint, please.
The WB and UPN 96 to 2003.
No one loved the Crucifix on either of those networks.
I don't know.
Oh, guys, just got to think of it. Crucifixes. Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Of course.
Oh, right.
All right, we're leaving countries. We're now just a melange of the rest of the world.
Okay.
Vietnam is our country. The show, Peculiar and Eccentric. Peculiar and Eccentric for... Sarah.
Hint.
NBC, 1999 to 2000.
Freaks and Geeks?
Freaks and Geeks? You are correct.
Nice.
And That to Me is a Life. Croatia.
Oh. Jeez.
Hint.
ABC, 1994 to 1995.
My so-called life.
Can you say that again so people can understand?
My so-called life.
Correct.
The one I said grouchily before was How I Met Your Mother.
Portugal, Will. Jess and the Boys. Jess and the Boys.
Yes. Jess or Jeff?
Jess. J-E-S-S.
I'll have a hint, please.
The Fox Network, 2011. Can you get the dogs? 2011 to 2018.
New Girl.
New Girl is correct. All right, everybody. One of the dogs has been put away. Might be slightly less dog noises. Continuing our rest of the world round from Russia, Anatomy of a Passion.
Anatomy of a Passion. I'm going to need a hint.
ABC 2005 to the present day.
Oh, my.
Anatomy of a Passion? Grey's Anatomy?
There it is. Although The Bachelor would also work, but yeah. I guess that started earlier.
Possibly the best title so far from Greece, Asphalt Night. Asphalt Night.
Asphalt?
Knight Rider?
Correct.
Nicely done.
For Will, from Norway, King of the Grills. King of the Grills. King of the Grills.
Hint, please.
Fox, 97, 2010. 13 years.
Oh, King of the Hill.
King of the Hill. Good for 1 point. From España, Father Made in the USA.
American Dad.
Yeah. From Lithuania, Dry Law, : The Birth of the Mafia.
Is this The Sopranos?
No.
No, what is it?
To think about it a little bit more.
Oh.
Dry Law, Birth of the Mafia. Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, of course.
Okay. Back to the desk. For Will.
Hint, please.
Okay, this is a good hint. NBC and Yahoo! ! 2015.
Community. Community.
The only show about to which that hint would apply, I think.
Yeah, I can't escape Yahoo. I just can't escape Yahoo.
It'll follow you everywhere. Everybody's last question coming up. You want to do a quick score break, please?
Sure. Will has 9 points. Sarah has 15 points. I have 18.
Okay, here we go. Finland, Spectacles Fogged Up. Sarah Bunting, Finland, Spectacles Fogged Up.
Spectacles Fogged Up.
Yep.
Hint.
Okay. CBS, 2007 to the present.
Spectacles Fogged Up? I don't know.
Any guesses?
It's not anything naval, is it?
No. I think it's spectacles instead of glasses because you're supposed to invoke some nerdiness. And that is Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory.
Oh, that thing.
Sure.
One more from Spain. The Girl from the TV. The Girl from the TV from Spain.
Hint.
Yeah, okay. CBS, 1970 to 77.
That girl?
That's a decent guess.
Can I steal? Can I steal?
Yes. You could, but you'd be wasting
it. It's only
it.
For 1 point, though.
You can't, I know,
you
but
can't,
I just
and you can't
I,
win.
I know, but I want to screw over a future guess.
Give us the answer before I...
Yes. We will give you glory, just not a... Yeah,
day points.
Fine. Is it Mary Tyler Moore Show?
Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Oh, there. Of course. Good job. How many
Mary Tyler Moore was not a known quantity on Spanish TV, so they used her occupation instead. How many Dave points? Let's give him 7 for the 7-year run of Mary Tyler Moore Show. All right, our last question of the game, also from Finland, The Perfect Women. The Perfect Women. Yeah, this is
hint, please.
ABC, 2004 to 2012.
Desperate Housewives?
Desperate Housewives, correct.
It is.
Good for a point. All right, final scores, please, to our Arianna.
Will finished strong with 10. Sarah had 15. I had 18.
Excellent. Well, before we...
She's back!
Make it official.
Thanks to two steel meals.
Let's do our tiebreaker, and we're going to give out a steel meal for the winner.
Ooh.
This is how it works. The following are all translations of the same show from various languages. I will start reading the translations and the country of origin. First person to correctly shout out the name of the show wins. Okay?
Okay.
You only get one guess until everybody also guesses, and then we'll start another round of guessing. Here we go. From Chile, it's known as Sacrifices for Family. From France, it's known as The New Poor. From Portugal, it is known as From Bad to Worse.
Is it the middle?
Incorrect.
Damn, I'm out.
From Denmark, it's never the middle. It is Family for Life. From Bulgaria.
Arrested Development?
Arrested Development, yeah!
Hey!
From Bulgaria, it is known as Company Monkey Business and Construction. From Hungary,
that's right,
The
Bulgaria.
Verdict Family. And Slovenia, It is Weaned Relatives. Weaned Relatives. Excellent.
Amazing.
Nicely done, Will, for a stew meal for future valued guests.
Tara.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We took to the ballroom for the mini season of Dancing with the Stars athletes before going around the dial with stops at Good Girls, Gotham, Dear White People, and Myths and Monsters. There were no objections to Will's case for Better Call Saul's chicanery to be accepted into the Extra Hot Great canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David Teagle, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
he defecated through a sunroof.
Sarah D. Bunting,
even the bear liked it.
And Will Leach,
it's good to see Tanya Harding's back. The world's better because of her, isn't it?
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next week on Extra Hot Great.
Accusés d'un vol qu'ils n'ont pas commis, n'ayant aucun moyen d'en faire la preuve, ils fuient sans cesse devant leurs poursuivants. Pour subsister, ils emploient leurs compétences. Quand la loi ne peut plus rien pour vous, il vous reste un recours, un seul, l'agence Tourisque.
L'agence Tourisque, c'est vraiment la dernière chance au dernier moment. Les mauvais coups, c'est truand. L'agence des règles au comptant. Si la justice vous apprend, l'agence Tourisque, l'agence tournant. Pour la victime, aux affoirs, tout à coup elle surgira.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.